On today's episode of Project Pundits Unplugged, the guys discuss computer interactions from a classic movie.
That was Star Trek. I'm pretty sure it was Star Trek 4. He sits in front of him and says, "Computer." And then it sort of just sits there, and the guy's looking at him, and he's like, "Computer." And he's like, "Here, try this." And he hands him a mouse. Right? He's like, "Oh, sorry. Hello, computer."
Right, yep, yep.
"Computer? Computer? Ah. Hello, computer.
Just use the keyboard."
And then somehow he's able to type like 400 words a minute.
Braden has some internal things to take care of.
It's internal responsibilities. No work stuff.
Like an enema? That kind of internal responsibility?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Jim.
I honestly don't know what you meant. That was the first thing that came to mind.
What? Why? What on earth? Why would that? Okay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to some episode number in season two of the Project Pundits Pod. We had quite a bit of fun on some of our last episodes, which amounted to also a large amount of work to get them out. So we hope you're enjoying them. Haven't been canceled yet. So fingers crossed.
Far as you know, there's a lag, right?
Right. So. Yeah. What's the lag, right? What's the threshold for how many shares until it hits the person who's like, yeah, no. Interesting enough, today we're going to cover project management jobs and how to get a job or how to put yourself in the best position to get a job in a tough economy. And what's fascinating, depending on who you talk to, some people say we're not even near a tough economy, but I think we're in a very unique time where there are several signs of positive growth and economic growth. The stock market's doing, I mean, breaking records. There's record profits, record revenue, in the U.S. I mean, around the world, it's a little bit different. At the same time, through last year and still going into this year, there's been a tremendous amount of layoffs, right? So there's a lot of downsizing and I think right-sizing. And I think, you know, unfortunately, companies just overhired through this boom period. Like, it wasn't fiscally responsible. Interesting enough, it didn't make most companies go into lost territory with their financials. However, there's a lot of pressure to get back to having, you know, a rational set of books. So there's been a tremendous amount of layoffs. Interesting enough, it doesn't translate to the unemployment rate. We're still at the time of this recording, I think we're sub 4%, which is still just insane. That being said, I'm gonna kick this off, specific to a situation I ran into over the last couple of weeks, which really highlighted that, and along with a set of events that went along with it, highlighted again this dichotomy of, you know, things going really well yet not for everybody. So I don't know, Braden, is there anything else you want to frame out before I kind of...
I'll just say we've had some interesting discussions on the topic, specifically of it is a unique economy right now. So full disclosure, I have, I'll say, 9/10 of an economics degree, and then I pivoted towards the end and made a slight shift. But I still hold that there's way too much inflation. Jim just sent me something today that was showing how, but that's the new normal. I'm like, sure, it's the new normal if you want to erode people's assets. And anyhow, I mean, a different discussion, but it is a unique economy, particularly where I think there's a lot of indicators that you might traditionally see in a down economy without the negative profits, I think there has been a lot of, and without significant impacts in the overall employment rate for various reasons that could be, again, people falling out of looking for employment, et cetera. I think there could be a number of reasons for it, but it's a unique situation. So not a traditional economic downturn, but still lots of signs of people struggling. And yeah. And I think, Jim, you're going to talk a little bit more about that. So
yeah, I was actually kind of surprised with this. So, you know, again, the pod hasn't become successful enough to where, you know, this is the only thing I have to do to generate income. You know, in fact, the pod surprisingly hasn't generated a penny yet.
I can look to my other camera now. Hang on just one second, Jim.
That's right.
Poor Jim.
This isn't
supporting you just that. That's
no,
too
but
bad,
just
Jim,
that wasn't that. The point. My point was I have a day job where I run a practice at a consulting firm. We've hit this year running, at least from our sales pipeline and a lot of work. So what ended up happening is then you get back to, okay, we got to start hiring folks again, right? It's everything's cyclical, right? A little bit, you know, hopefully you can flatten some of the curves a little bit so that it's not as spiky, but so our sales pipeline's good. We're starting to hire. So, you know, the story goes, so one of my engagements with a great client, looking to expand and add a project manager, right? For an interesting broad set of work. It's a fun little project, you know. While I was looking at that and finishing the job description, something on LinkedIn popped up, of course, and said, hey, you know, you get a free, and this is for everybody. By the way, job tip for anybody who's hiring, you get a free job posting with your LinkedIn account. Now, come to find out after I posted it, you get a free one, but they cap it at 10 submissions or applicants to that job posting. So anyways, I said, what the heck?
Which might have been a good thing for you, Jim. It's too bad that you paid for more than that because, man.
It's crazy, right? So I threw it up there figuring, what the heck, right? So in the title of it was a technical project manager. I didn't even put healthcare in there. A lot of the work we do is very healthcare specific, but in this case, some healthcare, but a lot of technical. So it's a, you know, I'm looking for a mid to senior person, nothing crazy. I posted it up there. Interesting enough, I was on the phone and all of a sudden my you get notifications when someone applied, right? So I got in 2 minutes 17 applications. It's like, wow, that's interesting. And I looked at them and just at a glance, people with good experience, like just on the surface, you look through like, oh, they were 10 years at here, like, and they did this, this, and this. So just some good signs. It's like, wow. And so LinkedIn sends a note saying, hey, we cap it at 10 submissions. They couldn't even cap it. So many submissions so fast, right past that 10 into 17.
So 2 minutes after you sent the posting, you're getting a message back saying you've already hit your cap.
I think it trailed a little bit, but like, but yeah, it's just like right away. And so they say in the note saying, hey, we cap it at 10. If you want it to be seen, if you want this posting, we'll keep it up. But if you want people to actually see it, you have to pay. You know, our estimate says $77.89, you know, $77.89 a day recommended budget, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, all right, I'm not paying for that. We have a recruiting team that does really well and everything else. This is, you know, supplemental. However, they then sent a note saying, but we have a running a special where we'll give you 3 free days of this job posting, and you can cancel at any time. But any time after that, you have to set a budget for that 4th day and all that. And the volume never slowed down. I was massively blown away. So over the first it was like 3.5 days, I got over 500 submissions. So right when it was time to kind of decide whether to continue or cancel. Anything else? The volume was flying in. There was a lot of quality applicants and things like that. I said, I'm just going to, this can't continue. So I ended up floating it for another 3.5 days and got a total of over 1,000 applicants. And on top of that, a number of people, several dozen people reached out and, wrote me personal messages, and they ran the gamut. I mean, you know, your typical cover letter. It's funny. I should de-identify some of them, because what was interesting was clear that there was a pattern in a number of them that were like generate. I swear they're generated by like a generative AI, like a ChatGPT. They're well written, but the patterns were almost exactly the same, right? And they're good.
Help me sound desperate, but not too desperate, right? Like whatever the prompts are that you're throwing in ChatGPT.
So as I was going through this and getting the messages, and I actually wrote back to a lot of people. I actually wrote back to everybody who wrote to me, but and I'm sure somebody will see this and say, you forgot me. I mean, I have hundreds of messages in my LinkedIn inbox. I get a lot of spam and things as it is as well.
And Jim, pitches. unless you have a personal connection with someone, that's never an expectation. I'm impressed.
I wrote back to any of them.
That's amazing.
You know, I read some of them. And so this is why we did this episode, right? So this was surprising to me. Right. First, that we got that many applicants. Statistically, when I went through the first 500, or say it was about 450 I went through, I kind of did a very high level sort. I did, you know, high probability, medium, low, not, don't match. And then there were people who were just experienced, but nothing relevant. They were good, but not for this. Through the messages that I got back, I noticed a pattern of things. I noticed I did, you know, and I hate to say this, and I'm never going to call anybody out, but like people who are overly like they're in, you know, a bad spot, right? They've been out of work for six plus months. You know, I had a couple of people like sending me copies of their project plans, like of analysis they did and a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm like that doesn't, I will tell you that it, like, if you oversell, you're underselling yourself. Like it comes across as desperate. And I know that's not the intent. So this is part of the reason we wanted to do this episode, is how do you navigate in these tough situations? And, you know, honestly, we don't have all the answers. I've been in this situation before, and I've felt desperate in different things. So we just wanted to take some time. We covered some of this in prior episodes, but we didn't deep dive into this. But, you know, the fact there are so many folks out there looking for work, it does seem to be tough. You know, things like that. We wanted to go through a few things that may be a refresher for some of you guys, and then some other tips and other things to think about. That's kind of where we're going to go.
I think, you know, one of the first things, as Jim was sharing, and he's trying to, you know, just in case, in the off chance that someone's listening, maybe who participated in some of those resumes, that we're not going
to shout out, by the way, too. Out of those thousand people, we got a bunch of new subscribers. So, and I have to say, I want to be very careful. I hope everybody subscribes, but there cannot be a quid pro quo here. You know, I appreciate
subscribe, and you're at the top of the list for
right.
Well, so that's part of, you know, as Jim was sharing me the experience and sharing some of the things. One of the first things that I took away as he was sharing is some of the very personal things that people were sharing. And so maybe that's one of the first things to talk about is when you're contacting a friend, right? If I knew Jim, before I send him my resume, I call him up and say, hey, can I talk to you about my current situation? And Jim's a friend who knows me and we're close. Yeah, of course you're gonna say, hey, you know, here's the things that are going on. Can you help me? You know, I'm willing to do whatever. Can you help me out? Cool, great. When you don't have that rapport with someone, sharing personal, I'll say anything outside of your resume, you know, it may single you out as someone who, you know, rightly or wrongly, right? I get it. You feel this desperate. Both Jim and I have been in these situations where you're like, oh, great. You know, I've got to find a job. I've got responsibilities, whatever. Everyone's probably been in that situation who's listening. If you're not, you're a punk, whoever you are. There we go. But sharing that context may actually, even though you feel it, may actually single you out as someone who is overly dramatic, high maintenance, someone who a discerning hirer might say, hey, I've got 25 other better candidates who aren't telling me these huge sob stories. I get it that you want to share.
I mean, basically, you can't control the person's reaction. That's the bottom.
Right.
Right. Like, you may run into somebody who's like, I've been in that exact position, and they may empathize, and you may go right to the top. I will tell you, that's probably not the case, but you can't tell how someone's going to react to that.
And I would say, if I were weighing the average person, so if you wanted to take a gamble with it, you say, hey, I'm hoping that someone's going to just latch on to that sob story. Latch on to the fact that I'm very genuinely willing to do whatever, and I communicate that. I would be willing to guess that the majority of either HR folks or hiring managers are going to be put off by it, as opposed to say, hey, I'm going to respond to that. That would be my guess, is you're going to diminish your chances as opposed to increase them. Jim, I don't know if you feel differently about that.
No, I agree. And it's... I don't want to make a weird equivalency between things, but
oh no,
maybe I'll try it.
Okay, maybe no. This would be the right time, Jim, for you to turn on something we call filters.
No. Okay, you gotta make it
the
relatable.
The rest of the world has filtered. No,
for those,
please don't.
We'll dip our toes in this. Similar to if you're going on a date with someone. Oh, no. Right. And you're trying to make, see, it's working. You're trying to make a good impression.
No.
You got to be careful with how much you're sharing on that first date. Right. It's not all that different with that. Like, if you're going to go on a date, you're not going to be like, you know, I don't know. I lost. Like, what's coming to mind?
I hate to say this. No, Jim, stop. Jim. I hate to say this, but the analogy is actually a good one. Oversharing too quickly is just going to put people off.
You want to highlight the good things, right? And I think that kind of gets into the second thing, sure. Right? You want to...
Yeah, so talk about that, yeah.
Put some effort into figuring out what the characteristics are that you should be highlighting related to the specific job you're going after, right? If you have one generic resume, that's great, right? However, in this day and age, you've got to do your best to stick out among the crowd. So if you have a bunch of different experience, that's great, but try to find and highlight, and that may change the title of the job you're seeking in your resume. There's a couple of areas where your objective or things are relevant experience. There are other things you can highlight, and that could be either in a resume or in a cover letter where you can highlight those things.
And Jim, just real quick, we were talking about this the other day. I had called it flavoring your resume. Yep. And what we mean by that is, number one, don't ever be dishonest in any way on your resume. That will get found out. People will always find out. Don't do that. But what you can do is highlight the stuff that's relevant and take out the stuff that's not. So many people want to just barf it all. It's actually way more effective to actually take stuff out. If I'm a PM, and let's say that I'm applying for a role that's more oriented towards solution architecture, I'm making this as an example, right? I would go through all of my roles and I would highlight the work that I did that's more relevant to solution architecture, and I might take stuff out. I'm not saying leave gaps in your resume, you know, still say, hey, I did this and this and this, but I'm going to spend more time and more space on my resume highlighting the stuff that's relevant. To Jim's point, I might tweak job titles to emphasize, hey, here's what I was doing to help them understand my role, where that role was relevant to what they're looking for, et cetera. So flavor your resumes. And if you have maybe groups of positions that you're applying for, maybe you are applying for a set of solution architecture roles, a set of pure PM roles, and a set of analysis roles. I might create three separate flavors of resumes that highlight my architecture experience, my PM experience, and my analysis experience, and use those for those applications as opposed to just one generic resume. Yep. That I barf out everything.
And the same thing goes for like industries, right? So a lot of times there's applicability, but same thing, if you have skills that are healthcare versus construction, like if you've done a mix, just tailor, do some tailoring. I mean, don't go crazy with that. And don't get into misrepresenting your background. So I don't know. We want to cover kind of that part now, the misrepresentation and how people represent themselves and their experience.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this is the appropriate, as we're talking about resumes and kind of what to share, what not share. One additional item, as we're talking about, you know, kind of what to tailor or to leave out. The other thing Jim and I were talking about the other day, too, is if you have extensive experience, let's say more than 10 years, 15 years, when you get down to the old stuff, right, the very old stuff, employers aren't looking and don't really care that you had a paper route when you were 15. They don't care about even the developer experience. They might a little bit that you had 20 years ago. They're interested in your recent experience at much more than your long ago experience. And it's typical to, I know when I get to the bottom of my resume and it's the older stuff, I'll just say, I might say, summarize the whole thing, everything older than 15 years, just to say various additional roles in, you know, and make a one single summary line that you can, you know, some that they're welcome to get details if they need it. But if it's not relevant, and it doesn't represent maybe a unique piece of experience that you had, leave it out. And don't share anything older than 15, 20 years.
I will tell you, in the resume submissions I got, and I sent a couple people, and you know, again, I don't have a tremendous amount of time. I did respond to some specific things, a couple things that drove me crazy that we'll get into that I responded to. But so I saw like a person who had like seven years of experience. This woman, it was great. She had a couple of things. She you could clearly see she got increasing responsibilities. She wasn't, as far as we could talk about job hopping, it's different than it used to be. I used to say, you know, you can stay at a job 5 years. I don't think that's reality anymore. But you don't want to show every 6 months you're hopping between jobs. Anyways, this person showed a good history. She got her degree and, you know, did a year and a half here, and then did 3 years and then like 4 years. And so it was good, but she still had like a hostess at Applebee's and like, and then some, like a Starbucks barista. And I'm like, and that's probably not relevant to what you are as a professional at this point in time. So just take it off.
What that communicates, right, at least to me, probably to Jim as well, is that you're someone that struggles with filtering, right? Already you're sharing with me, I mean, PMs, one of the biggest differentiators between good ones and mediocre or bad ones, it generally is not being able to filter, to be able to say, this is relevant to my stakeholders. This is relevant to the audience that I'm talking with. This is not. In your resume, you communicate that. And I can read right now, if you're sending to me and saying, let me tell you about my paper route, my barista experience, right? Unless it's funny and you're saying it as a joke or something, right? If it's, and even then I wouldn't do it. It communicates to me you struggle to filter, and it probably puts you in a lower tier right off the bat.
Or it's just, you know, you're not thorough. Like you just keep adding experience and you never step back. And there are a multitude of things you cannot control. You cannot control, even if you perfectly lay out how you want someone to interpret your background and experience, you can't control how they're going to react. In projects, you can't, like, there's so much you cannot control. However, so that makes it even more important to nail the things you can control. Spell people's names right, like when you're sending them an email. Like, don't have misspellings. Like, check your grammar. Braden and I talk about presentations and different fonts and size, like just colors. But in resumes, it applies probably even more. Don't have misspellings in your resume. So I spent the first 16 years of my career in quality assurance, and I used to get quality assurance resumes, which is just doubly bad, that had spelling errors in them. And I'm like, your job that you're applying for is quality assurance. Like, can you start with your own crap? Like, so
there's probably, to be clear, right? This applies to project managers, probably not to like engineers or something.
No, right, where that's not the
someone
core.
Who right. The maybe the poorer that you spell, I might actually say this is a bonus, right? Like, right. I love that this guy can't spell. He's not wasting any brain cells
on spelling or stupid grammar. It's all focused on engineering. I might like it, but as a PM, we are literally rating the start of your assessment starts with your resume.
Yeah.
And we're looking at organization skills, presentation skills, communication skills.
What are you highlighting? To Braden's point, the focus, filters, what are you highlighting? It's your ability because it's all relevant, right? It is almost like an interview question in and of itself. Like, what's your ability to organize?
And you can read it in their resume. I'm looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, why don't you talk about the length? Because I like a similar type of thing. Like,
the length is easy.
It's always been a traditional thing. Like, I don't believe this has changed at all. You know, so when Braden's going to go through this, like I've heard, it's a different world now. I'm like, no, it's not.
The guidelines are easy on that. Now, again, you're talking to a couple of folks who have hired many people over the years, worked with HR organizations in multiple companies. This is still, I would say, standard guidance. If you have less than 5 years of solid experience, I'll give you plus or minus. This isn't right. This isn't like a hard line. But I'll say, generally speaking, if you have less than 5 years experience, you're going to have a one-page resume. If you have more than 5 years experience, regardless of how much experience you have a two-page resume. If you have a resume longer than 2 pages, you're doing something wrong. And I say that not to say, you're like, no, I want to show all of this experience. Great. Show the most recent and highlight at the end to say, I've got lots more if you want to talk about it. But sending someone a 5-page resume, it communicates to me you don't know how to filter. It is a communication thing that you've done a great job in saying, I can't control and edit myself.
I will give you the other reason people give me for that is that they wanted to make sure to highlight that they have, like, when you do a lot of projects, sure, there's a lot of unique circumstances you can run into and responsibilities you can have. And their answer is, I want to highlight that I've done all these things. And I'm like, it doesn't, like, I'm not looking at a resume. Like, I don't know if I've hired 1,000 people, like, directly, but it's close. I mean, at least hundreds. And not once did I go through and look for plucking out bullet like on page 7. Like, more often than not, I'll just discard it because as you guys are aware, those of you listening to this, just like I said, got 1,000 resumes. Like, I'm going through them pretty quick. So if I can't pick out, like, I'm gonna filter you out right away. So, I mean,
one or two pages.
Yep.
Not more than two. So to my guidance, again, to summarize, it's one or two pages, never more than two, no matter if you have 50 years of experience and it's all amazing and different. Great. 2-page resume. One, if you have very little, it's your second job or third job, keep it to one page, condense it. I know you feel like you want to do two and share every little experience. If you're sharing every little experience, you're showing that you're not able to efficiently communicate. Keep it brief and to the point. Save the details for the interview.
So just let's just round out the resume piece. Cause again, I could keep going. But some other quick tips, have your name on the resume. I actually, in this day and age, like a link to a LinkedIn profile, or I'll state it differently. Whether you have a link there or not, have an email address. You don't necessarily have to have a phone number. In my opinion, I just have your email address. But generally speaking, have a LinkedIn profile, and it is table stakes these days in the industries, and especially as project managers, and make sure that the data you're representing on LinkedIn aligns with the data that you're sharing in your resume.
It should be perfectly synchronized. It should be the only thing that you're going to want to make sure you do is if you flavor resumes, just make sure they still generally align with more generic information that you have in LinkedIn. Absolutely.
Spelling, grammar, all of that stuff. There was, I thought a really good, and there's a resume I got from somebody I ended up responding to her. she had a really interesting background, data science, healthcare, had some good internships and a year of experience, which is all good. The resume looked good, but she spelled Northeastern wrong. Like she had an R instead of an S in for Northeastern. And I'm like, so I happen to just respond that. Like I just sent her a screenshot and like, you have this misspelled. Like, just to round that out, and Braden and I were talking about this earlier. If you can't be objective about yourself, like if you can't step back and assess like what we're talking about, summarizing and how you've laid things out and all of that, find somebody else objective to do this, to give you that assessment. And
Jim, I would even say, even if you do think that you're very objective assessing yourself, have at least two people take a look and give you and it should be people that you're comfortable receiving
honest,
frank feedback from, someone who can say, no, don't, take this out, take that out, add this. Yeah.
I know we could go deep on this, and we want to get us, I do want to cover. So I did see in some posts, and one of these people probably recognize that I'm talking about them, and I'm not in any way disputing what this person had posted. This person had raised that they feel like there's a set of ageism within the process. This person happened to have a lot of experience and whatnot. Some of that, to combat that, so it's kind of like that, what's that show, The Voice, where, everybody's objectively looking at that. Same thing, you don't have to have certain sets of experience in depth beyond 10 years. And like, if especially if you get to 15 and like, it's all relevant, and then you have different, like you pivoted jobs, you could drop, that's one thing, you could drop that. You don't have to put your, and I found more and more people doing this, you don't have to put the year you graduated from colleges on LinkedIn. You could just put what the degree is that you got and whatnot, right? Because that's another way, if you really feel that's happening. So I am sure there's some level of ageism out there, and it probably goes in both directions. It may be more relevant to salary expectations and job budget. Like there may be other factors there, but if you're worried about that, there's some things you can do. I do want to, it's like, it wouldn't be an episode of the Project Pundits Unplugged pod if we didn't touch on a little bit of something that could be controversial. And I'm going to put some links. I sent Braden some links on this earlier.
Jim, haven't you already had enough controversy?
I think it's our job. Like we're going to wade into waters others don't wade into. So I found this pattern and I sent Braden some links, and I'll post some of these articles that were interesting. I have found pattern wise that men tend to oversell what they accomplished on their resumes, like and a lot of times younger men oversell. It cracks me up. I'm thinking of several people. And I found a lot of my female friends would hand me the resume like to review, and I'm like, you look like you delivered like $3 million worth of benefit last year, and you did all and you overcame all this. And like I read this and it looks like you were a project admin. Like I was checking the articles I sent Brina. I was checking to say, is this just something I'm observing, or is there really something there? I'll post them there. But another thing, this is why having family members or colleagues or someone else taking a look at your resume, because let's make sure you're not overselling to the point where you're lying. And at the same time, and I don't want to make it a woman or a men thing, because I'm sure, again, this is just more of the pattern. Like, don't undersell yourself either, right? Like, you worked hard, you accomplished a lot. Make sure that's coming across. So,
and I think having, again, that external voice is going to be one. And maybe, if you're concerned about gender bias here, right? Yeah. Have feedback from, a male and a female friend, and maybe you're, the honesty can, your male friend says, oh dude, come on, you've done way more than this, and you're like, I'm already lying. No, we could do lie more, right? And they are generalizations, but I would say I generally agree with your observations, Jim, that certainly I've seen people undersell themselves in ways that you, if you were asked for that feedback, would say, No, you need to add, emphasize this activity that you had, whatever it is. I agree.
You know, it's performance reviews. This is it. I found the same thing in performance reviews where you have to give a self review. Like, guys will come in, they'll all be like, if you're a star rating of 1 to 5, you're like, of course, everything was a 5 across
the board. Why are you limiting me to 5? Come on, right?
5+, right? And I found women just very honest. Like, I was at 3.7, and I was, and it's just interesting, the self-promotion stuff. But anyways.
Maybe, so you had kind of mentioned it earlier, but maybe a good pivot or inflection point here to say, all of this discussion on resumes, and again, resumes, great, fantastic. It's a necessary tool that you have to have. And we spend a lot of time sort of saying, hey, here's how to maybe tighten yours, or some suggestions on things to or not to include. Now I want everyone to take all the information that we just gave you and throw it out the door. And here's why I say that, right, is that if you're trying to get a job by submitting volumes of resumes, you're playing the lottery. You really are. You're playing a low probability game that you're going to get noticed. I think Jim's story illustrates it well, right? That he got, for a mid-level regular PM posting, 1,000+ resumes. We're talking kind of specifically in this episode about a tough economy, a challenging situation. Maybe it's not as bad in other situations, but right now, you do not want to be trying to get a job submitting a resume. And I know anyone who's gone to any, seminar, outplacement, whatever it is, obviously they tell you the way to get a job is a network. I'll one up that and tell you from personal experience as a hiring manager, right? When you're a hiring manager, if someone comes to you, hands you a resume, so this is what I would call a warm handoff, right? And this is what you always want, is a warm handoff, a warm referral. And what that means is that someone personally comes to Braden, comes to Jim and says, here's a resume of a colleague, a friend, someone I know and trust. Will you give them an interview? In the end, all you're looking for, right, in this whole process is how to get face-to-face for an interview. That's what you're trying to connect for, right? We can probably talk separately about what to do in an interview to have a better chance. But for this, we're just trying to say, how do you get to that interview? And the way that you're going to get an interview is if someone comes and talks to the hiring manager. That is almost the best guaranteed way to get yourself a job. Because now you've already gone past a filter. You are now in, 48 out of 1,000 that you put in there, Jim, to consider. If you get a warm handoff, you're only going to interview a smaller portion of those. And so you've already surpassed 1,000 candidates just by getting that warm handoff. Now, you're not guaranteed a position, but you're already playing a much higher state or higher probability game when you get handoffs. And so as you're thinking about how to work that network, especially if you're first starting out, it can be a little trickier because you don't maybe have a lot of people in the profession. Use people that you might not normally think of as your network, but initially the primary network is probably going to be your family, your extended family, your friends, your colleagues and fellow professors and students from college. Use your collegiate network. You're not going to have a professional network yet. And so you use all of the people that you know. If you have a bridge club, if you go to church, like I'm dead serious, that's your network. Those are the people that you know you, that would advocate for you and that you should be using. And so all of the discussion on resumes is totally secondary.
It's like table stakes. Like, it's not relevant to that. I will tell you, I go back to that, just that network of people, and I only know because I connected some people, but people, we were talking about being a barista at like Starbucks. The amount of connections you can get if a person comes in every day to get their coffee and you have a conversation, I mean, there are more than one person that came out of there that got into the professional world through Starbucks. the connections, like I said, are everywhere. Like, so there's other things depending on your period. We're talking about project management. Now, I have not gone to these, but there are local project management chapters of the PMI, right? And that is a networking with peers. That's also helpful. I mean, you know, so again, anything you could do to get out there, you're gonna miss you're gonna miss all the swings you don't take or whatever, like, you know,
miss all the shots you don't take.
Yeah, right.
Wayne Gretzky. Yeah.
Yep. Miss all the shots you don't take. So, anyway, so you know, just that's I think our main message on there. Again, the key point on what Braden was saying, though, it's that reference. It's someone is using their reputation on some level to bolster you. It could be just, you know, a little passive, but it makes a huge difference. So to that end, on LinkedIn as well, you can get references from other people. And that's another way you can politely ask people that you've worked with in the past to post the reference. And those things matter as well. You know, I think we kind of went pretty far on this. I mean, there's other, I'll fire
do
off
you,
a
Jim, I was going to say, you want to, do you want to, I was going to say, do you want to cover also, I know the last thing maybe that might be useful is just broadening your search, right?
That's what
I think
it is.
Sometimes,
yep.
Yeah. Talk maybe a little bit about
that.
Yeah,
no, and look, so again, broadening out what you're willing to do as well, it could be helpful. You do not want to dilute your value by doing too many things. So I understand that's the case, but, you know, consider horizontal moves, right? So if you're in project management, and Braden mentioned a couple of roles, there's ancillary roles like analyst roles. There's, technical roles. There's, you know, quality assurance roles. There's other kind of horizontal type roles. And then there's vertical change, whether it could be industry related. You can go on to the business side of things, but you can, you know, project management is used in all industries. So I did some research today and I looked up how many, I was just curious if I searched for project management roles on Indeed and on LinkedIn, there's thousands, like 50, like thousands and thousands. You know what the number one thing, just observationally I noticed, is that by far the majority of them are different flavors of construction project management, healthcare construction. Like there's a lot of them. And, you know, I don't know how much of a pivot it is to go, but that there's a lot of project management there. And then, you know, biotech versus healthcare is different. There's a lot, but that may be something you want to pivot. You get into there, that's a whole different growth track, you know, managing clinical trials and all the different regulatory work in there. I don't know what other flavors, just be willing to listen and pivot and don't be stuck in kind of one track, right? That'll open up other potential opportunities is, I think, the message, right?
Yeah, and be willing, I think, even to you're talking about pivoting across industries, pivoting across, I think, roles as well, and to be able to say whether it's, you know, architecture, analysis, PM, all of them have similar, but probably reusable aspects depending on your experience and what you've done, and can help you. I mean, in the end, being willing to take something more than just this one role with this one name,
right,
is going to give you a broader net when you're casting it. Yeah.
I mean, just I'll list off. It would be not be a PPU episode if we did not talk about. You could also potentially go back and get one of those additional Agile certifications because there's like 400,000 of them out there now.
Did you all notice? You know? Can we rewind and show Jim's face just before he says this? Because he does these blinks where it's like, you know, like he does. We need to put a monocle, you know, something that makes him look stuffy. Sorry, go ahead, Jim, Professor.
But, you know, who knows? Yeah. There are people, other members of those cults that will be happy to find another member and potentially open other doors because you know, you go through the check boxes and. This is you're a safe agilist level 16, and at that point you know how to transmute lead into gold and whatever else you learn.
Well, bring them all. I mean, why not say also you're Six Sigma, right. Green Belt, and I'm trying, you know, pick out all of the other certifications that have happened over the last, you know, 10 years and throw them in there.
That's right. There's so many. No, but joking aside, those are other things you could do to broaden, like there's free. No, but joking aside, education on what those things are, how they work. The certifications are an outcome of that. But like, use your downtime to better yourself.
Sure.
There's freelance That's websites. Super. If you guys haven't ever looked at a site called Upwork, like you could potentially get part-time like project management stuff to supplement your income and do other side. You would not believe the amount of different things that people are looking for.
We've used Upwork to get stuff done, and it's great for the gig economy. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So really, I think we went longer on this, and that I, you know, interesting enough, it is a somewhat tight topic, but I am empathetic, believe it or not, towards, you know, struggles people are going through. So we thought it was worth, you know, taking a pivot and spending some time on this. So
I tease Jim all the time about not having any empathy. But the fact is anyone who's personally responding to LinkedIn messages when he's got 1,000 applications, I take my hat off to him. I mean, I would have just said, yeah, too many. I'm going to do a quick filter, find the right ones and be done with it. Jim's going above and beyond and dedicating an entire episode to the discussion on top. So,
you know, and I'm not going to commit Braden and I to this by any stretch, and nor will I commit myself to this, but where there's an opportunity, if you're connected with me and I can make a connection, a referral over to somebody else who's connected, like you see it in LinkedIn, I'm happy to do that. I shared today, one of the people I've worked with previously, he went to a new company and that company has a bunch of roles. I posted that. I'd love for us to find through this community a way of sharing job posts and things. So if we can do anything to help out, we'll do it. But like, again, it's hard just as individuals to carve out a lot of time, and I don't want to overcommit that we can do that. But, you know, help each other out. And then, you know,
PPU headhunting agency is what Jim is now branching out into. That's awesome. I like it.
No. So that's all for today. Appreciate you guys tuning in. And hopefully some of these tips were helpful or good reminders, because a lot of times that's all they really are. You know them, but it's like, oh yeah, I haven't checked my LinkedIn profile in the last 5 years. I should go and check. There's nothing stale on there, right? So anything else you want to...
No, I think we covered it. It good topic, and I think timely given a lot of the activity that's happening right now.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening. Please do us a favor. We're getting some good momentum, but share, subscribe, like the social posts, anything you can do to continue to increase Braden and I.
Jim, you're coming off as really desperate. I mean,
that's right.
You're please. Violating your own.
Gosh, if you want to know why we're good, I will, you know. That's terrible. right. Please share it with your mother. Like, she'll enjoy it.
Tell them about your mortgage payment, Jim. Come on. I mean, that's right.
We'll start a GoFundMe for our sorry asses. But anyways. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.